studied, sunk into chapters 2 and 3, two full chapters of Revelation, and how quickly it can go. And I think also, so in some ways, how fast it can go, and yet also the fact that how much is there in two chapters, how much is there, which is something amazing in and of that. And then when we come to this last letter, there will be a lot. I'm going to try and go slow. I've been telling myself anyways, try and go slow. In some ways, because this letter is so chock full, I had to cut, I felt like I had to cut a lot, because this one, there is so much information, I can go on and on and on, but I tried to just stay in the lines a little bit for us. And this one, when I was there in Turkey, and just continuing to study and go over it, just how often I put myself back there. For this one really, really messed me up, and I find it fascinating in a number of ways, but yeah, this one just, it has so many layers to it, but it just has such screaming in your face-ness of truth that it can, I mean, for me, I've had this conversation a lot with folks, and yeah, it's disruptive, it's really interesting. But how I want to frame it, so we begin, I'll quick say a prayer, and then we're going to jump in, and we're going to begin with something that hopefully will frame this whole part of this letter, that at least get us, my hope is get our mindset into what we'll see how the content then shapes and moves within that. So gracious God, we desire to hear from you, so may our ears and hearts and minds be open to what you have for us. May the posture that is the meditation of my heart and the words of my mouth only bring honor and glory to you, God. And may we receive, and may we take what we hear. May it stir in us and shape and reshape our hearts. And then, God, may that be put to feet and to hands and to action and how we live as the church. And we will give you the glory and the praise. Amen. Amen. So I want to begin with the Shema, what is known as the Shema. You can think of it as the prayer. It's an ancient prayer. It's a mantra. It's a saying. It's a statement. And for the Jewish people going way back in the Hebrew scriptures, this is something that they would say at least in the morning when they awakened. And they would say it when they closed the day. One is, this is how we want to posture our hearts as we begin our day. And then at the end of the day, it's more of a, we hoped that we honored you, God, through our day. And sometimes, oftentimes, they would say it even in the middle of the day. Maybe what we would say is after lunch is almost a recentering. Okay, we're halfway through the day. Let us recenter on this truth and this desire of ours. So this was something that, one, I learned, and we memorized, and we said it every morning in Turkey and every evening in that way. And then much the same when I went on the Israel trip, we said it every morning and we said it every evening on my Israel trip as well. And when I came home from Turkey, though, it just meant the world to me. And then my boys began to learn it. And at the time, it was just my oldest and my middle. And now my youngest is in on it too. And there's something about a five-year-old saying the Shema that kind of does something to you. And so now we say it every morning when we go to school, when I bring them to school. We say this together, and then we have a little brief conversation of the details. So we'll say it in English, and then we're going to say it in Hebrew, because, and again, a five-year-old saying it in Hebrew, and he hasn't memorized in Hebrew, which is odd, right? And beautiful. Shema, S-H-E-M-A. That's the transliteration, is how we would call it. So the Shema, and Shema, that word in the transliteration in the English, it means hear. In Hebrew, hear, and so hear, and it also means obey. It means kind of a layered thing, but to begin with hear or listen, and so that's how it begins. And so this is found in the Hebrew scriptures in Deuteronomy, and in Exodus, but it begins this way. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Love your neighbor as yourself. And that's Leviticus 19:18. So it begins and they put it together, and then Jesus talks about it later in the New Testament. In the importance of love God, love your neighbor, and it becomes this one thing when some religious person comes to Jesus and says, what's the greatest command? And Jesus sandwiches them together and says, these commands, even though, and he makes it one. And he said, all other commands hang on this, these two. So we'll say it in Hebrew, and so you'll hear that where we've said, hear, O Israel, it's Shema. So Shema Yisrael. Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, Vehafta et Adonai Eloheka, Vehafta et Adonai Eloheka, B'chol Levavka, Uvachol Navshaka, Uvachol Meodeka, Vehafta, Lereaka, Kamoka, Amin. So, amen. So that's the Shema. And so my boys and I first say it in Hebrew, and then we say it in English each morning. And it's to build our lives on this. And you'll see when we step into this letter to this church, in this community, why this is so important. Because in Laodicea, there is a significant Jewish population, and so the church was birthed, which most of them were, but we see there were some that were more Gentile, more Roman, but this church was birthed out of a high Jewish contingency, so it was they have very deep Jewish roots, and so the Shema, the fact that this centered people for thousands of years for them, leading into this, that if this is central to their faith, this is central to who they are, is to love God and love neighbor, and then we get into it. So Laodicea, where we are in this map, as you'll see, we're right here by Lycus River, right kind of here in the middle. We will talk about the surrounding cities, but it's an inland city. It's a really big city for trade. They only began excavating this city in 2003. So they only began excavation, and what they have uncovered and discovered, as we'll get to see some pictures, is really quite incredible. And so for me, I'm excited because it's only going to increase. And I've seen pictures since I've gone. I was 4 years ago that I was in Turkey. So I got back in at the beginning of March 4 years ago. So it's been exactly 4 years ago. And already what more they have done is incredible. So they only just begun, I would say. So some pictures. This is looking out from Laodicea. That's interesting. Well, we'll start there, though. This is looking out from Laodicea. That's actually Hierapolis that we're looking out at. And so we'll get into Hierapolis more. But it looks like if you're looking at it, you're going, well, it looks like snow, right? It's travertine. It's travertine is what it is. And we'll get into that in a bit. See, travertine, so when you get up close and it's steaming, why? Because it's natural hot springs. That's what travertine does. So it looks like snow, but it's actually warm. So this, well, I'm interesting that my, but we'll get into it. That's okay. All right. Fascinating. So this is water and this is travertine. So we walked on that and look at you see the hot air balloon? They do tours and they go over it, which is fascinating because Hierapolis is this incredible city. And you'll see with Laodicea, Hierapolis, and Colossae, we would call it a triangle cities or a tri-cities because they run close to each other and very, very important. So this was my roommate in Turkey, and I took a picture of him walking through it because that's what we had to do. Take off your shoes and walk in it because it's a natural hot spring. That right there is essentially walking through a hot tub. And it's all over Hierapolis. It's hot springs. So this was at the cafe. And so what we would think is, oh, there's a pond at the restaurant or the cafe. It's a hot tub, the whole thing. And it's natural hot springs. They do nothing to it. It's natural to it. It's this travertine that's a part of just the soil, the ground, and it did this. And so we were there only briefly, and Brad said, quick, take a picture, Wally. We got to go. We're going to go to lunch. And I'm like, why don't we eat here? Well, Russians owned this cafe. And so what they allow people to do is they eat, and then people would strip down naked and just go in the hot springs. And he's like, so we're not going to stick around for that. And I'm like, okay. This then is this thing behind there, that's where they're all doing excavation, but this is already what they've done, and this behind here is Mount Cadmus, and that's really, really important. So Mount Cadmus, we'll get into that. So that's another picture of Mount Cadmus. So I have some other pictures, but we'll start with this. Some thoughts on Laodicea, and then the surrounding, because Mount Cadmus, at the base of Mount Cadmus, is Colossae, the city of Colossae, where we will know the letter to the church of Colossians. And so Colossae is nearby, and it sits at the base of Mount Cadmus, really important. But Laodicea is founded by Antiochus II around 260 BC, named after his wife, Laodice. So he named this Laodicea after his wife Laodice. And then in 188 BC or BCE, the Battle of Magnesia took place here in Laodicea. It was fought and won by the Romans, defeating Antiochus III. So defeated them. And then it becomes Roman controlled, Roman owned there in 188 or about 186 BC after the war. In the first century, when this letter is written in Revelation to the church, the population of Laodicea was 120,000 people, 120,000, so it's a significant size city and ones that we've looked at. Now, here's where we get into really, like, note-taking. In 26 AD, Laodicea competed with 10 other cities in Asia Minor, kind of our map that we had, competed to be the Neocorus, a word we've looked at. Neocorus is the worship headquarters for the Emperor Tiberius. So Tiberius is the emperor of Rome. He was the emperor for the good bit of Jesus' life. And so this is 26 AD. Jesus is running around in the Galilee, if you will. And they went and said, we would like to be the Neocorus, the headquarters, the worship headquarters for Tiberius. They lose out to Smyrna. And so Smyrna wins the Neocorus for Tiberius. And we looked at that letter way back when, the second letter. And they lost out, and Rome explained to them, we did not choose you, Laodicea, because you do not have enough resources and you do not have enough wealth. You are too poor for us to choose you as our headquarters. And that sticks with them. Now, with this letter to Laodicea, we're going to compare in some ways, because it is stunning to me that it comes right out of Philadelphia. Philadelphia was the one before, which, if you remember, was deeply personal, as they all are, but deeply personal and very intimate, because the church in Philadelphia was some 25 to 36 people. Small church, Philadelphia was. And so it's a very intimate letter, and Philadelphia was only encouragement. There was no criticism or critique. They were being persecuted by the Jews and by the Romans, and they were just taking hit after hit. And so the letter was all encouragement, and it was deeply intimate. This letter to Laodicea is going to be a bit more big. It's going to feel systemic in its critique. And oh, by the way, get ready, because there is zero encouragement here. It is all and only critique. And it's going to get at some systems that is very personal. So it's like through the personal, we're going to get at the systemic. So Triangle Cities, Laodicea, Colossae, and Hierapolis. Colossae was 10 miles southwest of Laodicea. So 10 miles away is Colossae, and Hierapolis is 6 miles north, and we had that picture where you could see it. So I did that from standing there because and I'm like, hey, there's Laodicea, or Hierapolis, where we had come from. We started our day there. Then we went to Colossae, and we ended our study day. So in one day, we did Hierapolis, which I could do teaching after teaching on that city, and then Colossae, and then we ended with Laodicea, which is probably why I sat on the steps of the theater and bawled my face off when we got through this. So you have Travertine and Hot Springs in Hierapolis, and then Mount Cadmus at the base is Colossae, and that's kind of a big deal. Then we get into Laodicea. So in this already, what we'll point out, in Hierapolis, they have natural hot springs that are there to today and make like a stunning place to visit. It brings in all kinds of traffic today and obviously all kinds of tourists and everything. Where we stayed, our hotel, we went into what we would think is a swimming pool that was at least as big as this building, the pool. It was a big pool, but it was a hot tub. And it was natural. Like, they just basically made it into the hotel, but it's from there. So it's just this giant hot tub. And so we went into that. That was an interesting thing. I was the only one that was not required to wear a swim cap. I kind of felt singled out. He's like, swim cap? And I go, he goes, never mind. It's pretty fun. So they have this... they had travertine that does this. Now, Colossae, sitting at the base of Mount Cadmus, had cold, cool, fresh water that runs down. Mount Cadmus is snow-capped almost year-round entirely. It's just a brief time that it's not. And so there is always a natural cold water that runs down. And when we were there hiking up to Colossae, when we were walking up, there's a stream, and we would just stop and put our hands in it. And you know something when you can feel the water is like clean and crisp. You could feel it. It was so cold and clean and crisp. So that's what's near them. Colossae, cold, clean, crisp water from Mount Cadmus. Hierapolis, hot springs, natural hot springs. And then there's Laodicea, who had their water system piped in from 5 miles away, and they used limestone to make their pipes. I don't know why, but there was a high mineral content with a combination of hard water and the use of limestone for their piping, which left a residue in the water, causing the people of Laodicea to get sick. So they were often getting sick, and they would vomit when they would drink it. And so they actually, in excavation, they found some of the piping. So this is from the first century piping, that's limestone piping that they used, and they're piping it in from 5 miles away, and when the water got there, it was lukewarm, and because of the content, it made the people vomit. So we ask, why wouldn't you change that? Why wouldn't you change your system? Well, here's the thing it also did. It added a brilliant shine and softness to the raven black wool of their sheep. So when the sheep drank it, they didn't get sick. It made their coats the extra shiny and extra soft and brilliant. Why this did is because from that, what they made is black clothing, black garments, which were the nicest, fanciest, think tuxedos and evening gowns, and it became the place to get your fanciest, wealthiest clothes came from Laodicea. And by the way, what's so interesting, even today in that region, it's still known for their clothing to this day. But then everyone, so Rome, all of the high-ups in Rome went to Laodicea to buy all their fancy clothes. And what that did is that created an industry, trade one, so they could trade their clothes, but it also gave significant wealth to this community to be able to produce this really, really good clothing. So the question came to them then, do you change your water piping system so that your community can have good water, Or do you keep it the way it is, take the chance the people might get sick, and you continue to get wealth? They chose wealth over people's health. Laodicea said, we're going to keep it this way because this is an industry that's bringing a lot of money to our city, so we're going to keep this. That's why when you excavate it, you see the piping there, because they decided not to change how they did their water system. And they chose wealth over people's health. So their black wool becomes the market for fine black fabric, which is used to make the best clothing. Now, they had a temple to the god Zeus, who is the patron god, Zeus. They built a temple to Zeus. So this is the entrance of the temple to Zeus in Laodicea. Again, just something they've excavated recently, as in 2003. And what they have done is really, really something. So they build this temple to Zeus. And then in 60 AD, the city grows in significant wealth, but there is a massive earthquake in this region. And within that, Colossae gets crushed and destroyed within this 60 to 70 AD range. Colossae falls apart because of an earthquake. Hierapolis gets significant damage done to the city. Rome offers money to Hierapolis to rebuild, does not offer anything to Colossae, offers money to Laodicea. We will give you money to rebuild. And Laodicea says, actually, we built our own money. You can keep it. You didn't want us for your neo-chorus because we're poor. Now we're not poor. You keep your money. And what's interesting is they created a banking system there that became the banking system. They became the lender in the Asia Minor area, Laodicea did. They minted their own coin, and on their coin it said, we did it on our own. They had it minted on their coins. Imagine getting a coin and it says, we did it on our own. But that's what it said. They wanted people to know, Laodicea, well, we did it on our own. They created this incredible banking system. So when Nero, who was the emperor at the time of this, offered them money to rebuild, they said, no, we'll do it. We can do this. We've got this. They took deep pride in how they made it. Now, with their incredible wealth, they built a second theater. So there was one theater in this city, which we've looked at some of the others where they'd have a theater. They built a second theater for entertainment purposes, which was almost unheard of. Almost completely unheard of to have two theaters. Now, what's interesting is they had one facing the east and one that faced the west so that they essentially have entertainment for the morning and for the evening is kind of how they did it. Now, the northern theater seated 12,000 people and the west theater seated 8,000 people. So here's one of the theaters or where they've excavated. One of them is made of travertine. One of the theaters that they made was made of travertine, which they got from Hierapolis, right nearby. And the other one, though, is marble, which was a little easier. Now, I show you this. This is actually the theater in Aspendus. So Aspendus, why? Because they said this is what the theater looked like in its day, the one back here. Back in the day, looked like this. And this, by the way, in Aspendus, is the best preserved theater in the ancient world. This one here, ooh, come on. Like, we were in that, and it was. And then you go, oh, and this is what it was in Laodicea. It looked like this. And they had two of them. One, 12,000 people. One for 8,000 people. What it looked like. So there's a view from up top of the Aspendus one. That one was really quite something. And here's the other theater that they excavated. So one was facing one way, one was facing the other there. So we have that. Now, Laodicea is also known as a throne city. Why it was known as a throne city is because one of its founding family members held royal thrones both in Laodicea, a royal throne, and in two other major cities in Asia Minor. And then they had this succession of people who sat on the throne. And so Laodicea took much pride again in carrying the nickname Throne City, having famous ancestry that was that had a throne. So they were like, ah, our people, we're important. Now, from 60 to 95, and this is important, over the next 35 years, Laodicea builds one of the premier medical schools in the ancient world, where one of their doctors, Demosthenes, becomes world famous for inventing choleria and eye salve. So in here at their hospital, he invents choleria, which is an eye salve. He then wrote an ophthalmology guide that would be the guide for the next 1,000 years. That anybody had to do with eye doctors, eyesight, they used his guide for 1,000 years. It was the thing. And this choleria became a huge deal. And again, it put him on the map as one having the premier medical school, to which they do say there's a good chance that Luke, Dr. Luke, who wrote Luke and Acts, had spent some time or would have spent some time there in some learning form. But this eye salve he created helped them also get more money. They now have the best clothing. They now have the premier banking lending system, and now they have a premier hospital and eye salve that has been invented by these people. Now, the major earthquake that took place levels the Tri-Cities region. In 70 AD, Vespasian, who's the now in 70 AD, who is the emperor, sends money to Hierapolis to continue rebuilding. Colossae is left out and begins to fade. Colossae as a community begins to fade as a functioning community. Laodicea, in pride, rebuilds without the help of Rome. Now, here's the problem, and maybe you're already picking up on it. Laodicea completely ignores the needs of their neighbor, Colossae, who needed help. They could not rebuild on their own. Their city is crumbling, and we actually get to see slash hear the warning and the invitation to them to help your neighbor in Paul's letter to Colossae, Colossians, believed to be written in 62 AD. That's when it's understood the letter of Colossians is written by Paul, who is in prison, and he's writing to the church there, and he's talking about wealth and money and sharing and taking care of your neighbor. And so in Colossians 2, verses 1 and 3, I want you to know how hard I am contending for you and for those where? Oh, interesting, right? Paul's like, I'm with you guys. I'm with you. And for all who have not met me face to face, my goal is that they may be encouraged in heart and united in love so that they may have what? The full riches of complete understanding. Where's wealth found? In understanding, in order that they may know the mystery of God, namely Christ. What's the mystery of God? Christ, in whom are hidden all the what? Treasures. And what's a treasure? Well, God's wisdom and knowledge. It's wisdom and knowledge of God. Paul's writing in language they would know. Laodicea, help your brother and your sisters out. I'm with you. I'm contending with you for you. Please take care of one another, is what Paul says. That's in Colossians. And actually in chapter 4 of Colossians, Laodicea is mentioned again, where Paul is just trying to let them know, I'm with you all. You guys are neighbors, and I'm trying to help out too. Now with that, there's a good amount of information. It's enough to at least jump us into the letter to the church of Laodicea. Revelation chapter 3, verse 14, then. Ooh, sweet heavens. To the angel, that is the messenger, the ethos of the church in Laodicea, write, these are the words of the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the ruler of God's creation. How's that? These are the words of the one who oversees all of creation. The faithful and true witness, the ruler of God's creation. So it begins with a kind, now it's not like encouragement as in, hey, here's what I have for you yet, but it's at least a kind greeting. And I want to highlight that because we can all feel good for a second, because that's as kind as it gets. So there's like this kind greeting, but to say, hey, this is from the one who rules everything. I know your what?
Deeds.
Always, deeds. That you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were either one or the other. So because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth. Now, do you see how contextual this is? Hot water, Hierapolis, that's great. Cold water, Mount Cadmus, Colossae has cold water. Both of them are good, really good things. Your water is lukewarm, and it makes your people vomit. And it's the choice you've made, and I think it stinks. And in fact, they are throwing up because you're giving them garbage water, so I spit you out of my mouth because your actions make me sick. Do you see how that was that? So anybody who's heard, oh yeah, we're not supposed to be lukewarm Christians and we did some sort of thing. What? Well, if that means your choice stinks, then yes. Like that, because it's set in this context of hot is good, cold is good, lukewarm, not because like, oh, I'm kind of, not even kind of, they just flat chose poor, badly. We're not doing it. We want money at the expense of the health of the people. Cold is useful, hot is useful, but you have chosen the lukewarm, which is spoiled rotten and makes him sick. He is saying their deeds are rooted in greed and selfishness, which makes him sick. I mean, that alone, like, ooh, do we have to keep going? Yes, we do. You say, I am rich, right? That's what they say. Oh, I'm rich. I have acquired wealth and do not need a thing. But you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. Are they blind? They have eye salve. He's using words like, you think, naked. What? They're like, what are you? We have the best clothes. But he's like, you missed it. You're arrogant and you believe that you are self-sufficient and self-sustaining as if you are solely responsible for your wealth. And with money and pride at the forefront, it is a sign that happiness, this is key, like insight to me, happiness is the drive, not love and fidelity and joy. What you've done is you've exchanged, I would say you've exchanged the eternal for the temporary. We have lots of money. And for me, that makes me happy because now I'm like, and you go, but you're missing out on joy. You're missing out on unity and love in your neighbor. I counsel you to buy from me gold. Jesus says, buy from me gold refined in the fire so you can become rich and white clothes to wear, contrasting them, right? So you can cover your shameful nakedness and what? Salve to put on your eyes so you can see. Just screaming it because they're like, well, we invented salve. And he's like, you don't see. You don't get it. My salve, my wealth, my riches, this is what you need, not that. So what if you chose to live as if God was in charge, not the banks? God's riches are eternal. If Philadelphia was about who do you turn to when life is shattered, then the letter to Laodicea is who do you praise when life is good? Who do you praise and honor when the bank account says plus? When you got clothes on your back? When you're taken care of? He's inviting them to say, who are you giving honor and praise to in the midst of that? Those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline. So be earnest and repent. And anyone who is a parent or grandparent says amen. Right? Those whom I love, I rebuke. What's he saying? I love you guys so much. I mean, you have just off in the deep weeds. I love you, and this discipline and rebuke is for your betterment. I'm just trying to get you. So will you turn or return, repent to me? Turn back to me. Return to me. Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me. Jesus is talking to the church in Laodicea. So this is not about, I mean, it would say evangelism, because Laodicea in some ways is a very often quoted letter. But when you see in context, it's different. So here, he's writing to the church. So this isn't about evangelism. He's saying, church, I'm standing at your door. Your door is closed to me. I'm knocking. Please open it because I want to commune with you. I want to have a meal with you. And you got your door closed to me because you've been all about yourself. They ignore his ways. They have closed the door to him because they believe they have created this life that they live. They're drowning in pride. To the one who is victorious, Nikeo, I will give the right to sit with me on whose throne? My throne, Jesus says. Why? Because what do they take pride in? Their throne. We're a throne city. We have fancy people. And Jesus says, come sit on my throne with me. Be with me. Sit on Papa, Grandpa, Mama, Grandma's lap. Just as I was victorious and sat down with my Father on his throne. Come be with me. Not your throne of pride because of your royal ancestors. Whoever has ears, let them hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Here's the invitation again. So it would be in Hebrew, whoever has ears, let them shma what the Spirit says to the church. Hear and obey. So then, I hope we can lean into this with grace and we can hear this. I tremble, wept in the moment, continue, and when I study and when I read this and when I dig in, I tremble at how close Laodicea and the United States have become. We think we are invincible because of wealth and power and pride. Our wealth and our power. Wealth is not bad at all. I'm not saying that wealth is bad, but who gets the credit? Who gets the credit? What do we do with the wealth that we have? Do we entertain ourselves to death? I was just thinking this, and again, it's not that entertainment, it's not those things are inherently bad by any means, but I wonder if 1,000 years from now in the United States are excavated, and they think about what we've looked at in these pictures, what we've done when we've excavated these letters and what we've had, and we're looking at excavation of stadiums and theaters. I wonder if they excavate the United States and they're like, look at this football stadium that holds 110,000 people. Look at this entertainment thing that 100,000 people. Look at this. Look at this. So do we entertain ourselves or do we give and serve and love with overflowing generosity? Because wealth is not bad. What we do with it is the question. So I come back from Turkey and I remember I got back at the beginning of March. That fall, as I was putting together a teaching from this, I remember watching terrorist attacks, and maybe you remember in Paris, France. Any remember this? Terrorist attacks in Paris, France, and the death toll climbing, and I was reading about it. I didn't watch that. I was reading about it, and I was seeing, and it just kept climbing, and I'm like, oh, these reports. Each coming in, panic, desperation, and cries for help. Then I read the statement from President Obama, his statement that the U.S. will stand with France and support with aid. And he said, we choose to care because, and this is a quote, Obama says, this is not just an attack on France, but an attack on humanity. This is an attack on humanity. But then it happened. I'm reading the statement, and then they post it, and then it happened. I chose to read the comments that followed, and American people started to complain. Obama's giving our money away. We should be taking care of our people first. 4 years ago, People complaining about not having enough, both for here and there. We don't have enough for us and for our neighbor. Their complaints written, ready, and this is what I just sat and listened. Then I began to think, they're writing their complaints written from their heated houses with clean running water, using their computers, tablets, and smartphones powered by their internet, responding to what they have been watching on their cable television. People with these sorts of resources make up less than 3% of the world's population. And they're complaining about not having enough. Then I stumbled across a story about an hour later about a pastor in North Carolina moving into a 16,000 square foot house valued at $1.6 million, saying he has a big family he has to take care of, a big family with three kids. Thousands of people began to defend him when the reports of his house became public, saying, well, he sells all these best-selling books and that a pastor deserves double honor according to 1 Timothy. Which just raised the question for me as I'm reading it, as a pastor, how much is enough? But how much is enough? What is poverty? What is poverty? Who should we be helping, and when does helping actually hurt by way of creating entitlement? Questions we have to ask. And if three kids is a large family, and I agree that it is, then should I dial up several thousand more square foot of housing? Laodicea had a problem: pride, greed, excess, entitlement, a bloated idea of necessity, and a self-sufficiency that led to the rejection of community, rejection of neighborliness, and unity within humanity. They forgot God. America has the same problem. You know you have heard the gospel when it comforts the disturbed and disturbs the comfortable. Michael Frost, we looked at one of his books in a teaching series. Michael Frost did a writing where he talked about the zombie apocalypse. So there is like this big movement of zombie apocalypse, of zombies nowadays. But the idea is because we have The Walking Dead and we have zombies, it's a sign that the apocalypse is near. And kind of an idea. But what Michael Frost wrote about, and he's a pastor from Australia who's been spending lots of time over the last dozen years in the United States, he kind of sat back and he said, you know what, I wonder if we're experiencing a beautiful, not a zombie apocalypse, a beautiful apocalypse, where the end or final disaster is the fulfillment of the American dream. You know, the suburbs with the nice house, nice cars, and all the toys, yet we don't know who our neighbor is. Because we don't have to. Life is pretty, it's safe, but it's actually dying. There are more megachurches than ever in the history of the United States, and yet there are less Christians. We can attend, listen, and hide. We don't have to live, love, or give. Which then some questions for me, for us. Why do we want wealth? Why do we want wealth? We are in a season, Lent, that is rooted in humility and surrender. We are heading to the story of sacrifice, of a sacrifice that changed all of human history. Sacrifice. We are walking toward Jesus, serving and giving his life that we might be awakened to true life. So we spend this season of Lent reflecting and repenting of how our pride can inflate our ego, which can deflate our neighbor. Doesn't have to, but it sure can. We don't need guilt, and we don't need shame. So I always try and think about how do we talk about these things so as not to make people feel guilty and just shame them into living differently. What we need is awareness and honesty. We need awareness and honesty of what is before us so that we will do something about it. That's why. And from a heart that says, I don't want to get lost in the deep weeds. I don't want to drift. I don't want to forget my neighbor. I want to be alert to them. Michael Frost tells this story of a guy. He's talking with a gentleman, and the guy tells him this story as Michael Frost was kind of explaining to him this idea of a beautiful apocalypse. And they're sitting there, and this gentleman tells him a story. He's like, you know what? That makes me think. He said, made me think of just a couple weeks ago. He said, I came home from work, and I came in. My wife, who just had one of those frazzled days, I could tell. And she said, can we just get some takeout tonight and just shut it down? And he's like, sure. And so he got in his car, and he drove to a Chinese restaurant nearby. And he was standing in line waiting for his order. And while he was standing there, he looked at the guy next to him, and he kind of looked, and he double-looked, and he double-looked, and he kept looking, and he's like, huh. And he's thinking to himself, the guy looks really familiar. And he's like, why do I? And then he starts doing that mental Rolodex thing. Where do I know him from? Is it work? Is it from the PTO? Whatever. Like, he's going, where is this guy? And so he gets his food, he gets in his car, and he drives home, and he pulls into his driveway, and he gets out of his car, and he closes it, and he turns, and his neighbor pulls in and gets out of his car, and it's him. Oh, no. Oh, that's where I know him from, 25 feet away. And he said, then I pulled in my garage and pressed the door down, and I went into my house and thought, what's going on? What's going on? So what I would love to have us do before we slip into a discussion, hopefully this will just kind of maybe center us or recenter us, and then we can discuss this thick letter. But I want to do kind of put together what is what we would say a liturgy, but it's from an ancient text found in the Gospel of Matthew is what it is. But to break it into a liturgy so that we can read this or respond, I will share and then you can share back. So we'll do reader congregation kind of feel. I came to you as the least of these. This is found in Matthew chapter 25. I came to you as the least of your brothers and sisters. I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink.
Lord, have mercy.
I was a stranger and you did not welcome me.
Lord, have mercy.
I was naked and you did not clothe me.
Lord, have mercy.
I was sick and in prison and you did not visit me. It ends with, before you is your neighbor in need. And it says, Lord, give us eyes to see, ears to hear, and hearts to respond with generosity. So you can read that in Matthew chapter 25. Maybe you know it's the sheep and the goats story. And it just is this reading where Jesus says, I came to you. And it says, to one group, on the left, he says, I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was sick and in prison and you visited me. I was naked and you clothed me. And they said to him, when did we ever find you that way? And he says, whatever you do for your neighbor, you have done for me. And then he goes to the people on the right and he says, I was hungry and you did not feed me. I was thirsty, you did not give me drink. I was naked and you didn't clothe me. I was in prison and sick and you did not visit me. And they said to him, when did we ever find you in that? And he says, whatever you have not done for your neighbor, you have not done for me. Whatever you have not done for the least of these, you have not done for me. And he just made it really personal how we pay attention to our neighbor. And so it's good for us to remember that and think about that as we go into this letter to the church in Laodicea. And then we launch into the rest of Revelation. You see how that is set up. So, thoughts, questions, pushback, feedback.
You need a statement. You need awareness and
Sure. Does it look like the whiteboard from Sunday? So for us on Sunday, we basically asked the question, what is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, righteousness, self-control look like? What does that look like Monday through Saturday? What does that look like for an accountant, for a mechanic, for a school teacher? What do those things look like? And we begin to talk about this. So it's paying attention to that. So we know, like, what does it look like to behave in these ways to our neighbor, however neighborliness looks. And so people were throwing out all sorts of ideas and ways we could do that. So I think it's and that's why we say we're a practice-based community, is we want to ask really practical questions about what does this look like, so that it's not just, again, ideas or things we read in the Bible. Oh, we should love people. Because even that, you think for thousands of years, think about that, 1,500 years, they had been saying, this group of people, their ancestors, saying the Shema in the morning and the evening. You see what happens when it becomes ritual and doesn't sink in and shape your relationships and the way you live. If it just becomes rote, they're saying it in the morning, God, love your neighbor. And in the evening, I hope I loved God and loved my neighbor today. And there's Colossae, their neighbor, dying. And that city crumbled, fell apart, became no more. And it's like, what? So I think awareness just, I don't know, sometimes it is jarring. Sometimes we get awakened by seeing something on the news, reading something, hearing about a neighbor, and sometimes it's as jarring as like, hey, someone really close to me, just their house burned down. Ooh. What do we do when that happens? Do we just say, like, and this is where it tried to, you know, change me. It's like, should we be praying for them? We should be praying for them. But it's not just, well, we'll be praying for you. Because I'm sure they're like, great, but I also don't have anything to eat now. It's like, it's gone. I don't have any clothes to wear. They literally burned up. So I very much appreciate all your prayers, but could your prayers have some feet and hands to it, right? So sometimes awareness is just looking and seeing what is before us as a community and going, well, we got to do something about it. We have to. I don't know how, but I have to. Another one, Lent, this idea of honesty and awareness. So I shared on Ash Wednesday, one of the things I was giving up is judgment. Judging myself, judging others, like I want to give this up for Lent, you give it up. But just like there was this paying attention to how I can see people, see myself, and put down. But I also didn't say this, but what also I gave up for Lent was shopping. Not grocery. I let my wife know because she's like, "How are we doing?" And I said, "Not grocery shopping, shopping." Because, and then in part, it's like, "How much is enough?" And so I'm not going to shop because it can be a distraction for me. And for me, I can if I'm feeling icky, if a rough day, for me. What can be good is, I'll go buy a shirt or something. Like, this, I kid you not. I mean, I'm going to put Tara on the spot, but Tara, I think I texted you one day, and I don't know what it was, but it was some goofiness where we were talking, but I'm like, oh, man, a long day or whatever, and I'm like, time for a new pair of shoes and a pair of jeans. And I said, like, and she's like, sure, you know. And it's true, and it's not, and again, I don't want to say it's bad. But there's always like, but for me, what I knew going into Lent, you know what would be good though too? Is just not. Just stop. Take a break. Put your energy, and maybe it's like, maybe you feel icky and you actually have to be fully present with your icky feelings. Why do you feel bad? Own that. Name it. Don't just run from it and bury it in a new shirt or whatever. So I let my wife know. And let's see, so Ash Wednesday, that was Wednesday. My shoes came on Wednesday. And she's like, what are you giving up again? And I'm like, well, I'll share tonight. And she was going to be at Ash Wednesday. And I said, but also the other thing is shopping. And she goes, oh, there's a box here. Looks like shoes. That's how she responded. I was like, what are you? And I said, yes, but I ordered them last Thursday. Lent starts now. So I did not buy them. So funny in some ways, but long answer, but honesty and awareness. How much is too much? What do we need? We live in, again, less than the three, like, so the United States, less than 5% of the world's population for sure. We control or have 40% of the world's resources. 8% of the world, these things are embedded in my head, 8% of the world has a car, owns a car. 8% of the world's population owns a car. 33% of Americans own at least three cars. The United States spends more annually on trash bags than the other developed countries spend on their resources, all kind of resources. We spend more on trash bags annually than they would spend annually on kind of basic stuff. And again, it's not like, well, trash bag's not a bad thing, but it's just that, it's that jarring kind of wake up to some stuff. Kind of a deal. So it's just that, just kind of being aware and going, how much is too much? How much is enough? What do we give, not give? We take care of our neighbor. That's why, you see this letter? Goodness.
One thing we need to do is look for ways to accomplish this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Get creative. Someone I know, I had gone to church with for a number of years, and I went to Bosnia and Croatia with one of the daughters, but their dad, anyways, he died last year. He was 59 years old. 59, too young. 59, massive heart attack, died. And he was an athlete, this guy. But today was would have been his 60th birthday. And so his kids, four of his four kids, they said, you know what we want to do today? And he like put it on social media. We had this design company make cards. They were just like kind of a greeting on behalf of our dad. But they just said, please go do something, because our dad was kind and generous. Do something kind and generous for somebody else today, and if you want cards, we'll send you cards so you can, like, write, like, I did this on behalf of, that kind of thing. But, like, he inspired me. He did this. So, and they're just like, that's what we're doing for our dad's birthday, is we're giving it away. And I was just like, wow, that's creative. That's beautiful. Brilliant. Well done there. I don't know, things like that, sure.
Is there any evidence in the 2 years after this letter was written that they changed any of the
behavior? Laodicea?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other than, I was shocked. I just read last week when I was in more that the fact that in that region, in this area, they're still known in that area for clothing. Like, that's the major market, is clothing. Now, it's not bad, but it's just interesting. Like, you're, wow, that's so fascinating. What does that mean? I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's wealthy. I don't know. But there isn't any sign other than when we studied Colossae, that area a bit, the fact that they withered and died and literally became no more. And that, as a community and that church, kind of like had to leave because the town crumbled and was nothing. They didn't do, I don't know. That's the thing that I remember, that was part of it when I was there, is you're like, well, then what? And you're like, there's just not any signs of, And best we could tell, they stayed in bed, jumped in bed with the Roman Empire. You're like, come on. Yeah.
So how, the population was 120,000, but how many were the Christian church?
I don't know.
And if they weren't in that church, but they weren't taking handouts from Rome, then what were they?
What?
The people that weren't a part of the church.
Oh, part of the...
Okay,
so the people that were a part of the church but are not, like, basically, so what happens to them? Yeah. All I know is a lot of it was the invitation for them was to speak truth to power, to live into it, to create an alternative community. And they, that would kind of turn the community. And now, again, that's part of it is you can see why the church, in some ways, wasn't popular, because you're going to struggle. Because if you're not going to take from, and if you're going to try and create a different way of living, then it's going to be small, and it's probably going to be under the radar, because otherwise you'll get squashed. And Philip, one of the disciples, so in Hierapolis, there is the church that honors Philip, but Philip's tomb's in Hierapolis. And they just excavated that before we had gotten there. And they actually found it. And there was engravings for Philip's tomb where he was martyred. And part of it is because Philip spoke truth to power. He healed the governor of the Roman governor for Hierapolis. His wife got really sick. And she found out, hey, I understand there's this guy, Philip, who's healing people in the name of Jesus. Well, I'm sick. Someone get him. And they got him. And he healed her. Church history tells us, heals her, and she became a Christian. And then when the proconsul found out, he's like, what are you doing? I'm going to get killed. You can't do this. So they hunted Philip down, and they crucified him at the city gates so that everyone would see, you try and pull this, and we'll kill you. And so then they buried him, and so they excavated his tomb. So it was that kind of thing, like they'll squash it out. So then people are like, oh, so what do you do? And what Jesus says in these letters is, be faithful to me. Which means it's probably not going to be very popular. It's probably going to be really dangerous. And that's the thing that is interesting for us, though, because it isn't that way. We can be Christians, you know, if you will. And we can change the way things are. Without having, but also you can see, you know, you speak truth to power, you are generous. That isn't necessarily the system. And he gets so wild. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
If you're lukewarm, it's just you're some kind of mediocre, indifferent kind of Christian. And I'm not sure I ever really understood that. Why was being cold and evil better than
right.
being mediocre, lukewarm?
Right.
The way you explained it. Kind of.
Yeah, I've heard the same, at least going, well, at least you're acknowledging that you're out. You're naming that I'm just going to be off course. And it's not at all it. No, both of these are really good things. You've chosen to be lukewarm, which is actually not in between, but it's completely indifferent is how it would be. You're indifferent to the people. At the refreshing. And when you're cold, yeah. 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 Yeah, that's... Yeah, I remember. That's when we went through it. It was like, oh, that's so good. It was in it being standing there, and I remember, and part of the reason I took a picture of the theater, because really the theater there isn't all that impressive compared to where we're in Aspendus, and you obviously see that, but it's because I sat on those stairs and wept. I mean, it was, and because I was like just faced with all I have and not feeling bad about it, but just realizing like this whole thing. And just all, you know, then when we dug in and all of the study and just understanding as a country who we are, what we have, understanding we are an empire. It's not opinion. We're an empire, but we can do the most amount of good too. We have that ability and we do tremendous good. And some of the, there are aspects of the United States we ought to celebrate that are so amazing and unheard of around the world. And you go, that is fantastic. But then you just realize too, and we give, oh, we bless you, God, and let's keep going. But not like, you know, aha. And so it was just this real, honest, like, whew. And so it just was thumping. But also there was, I mean, there was all these things too of going, how much is enough? Do I have, like, how I live my life? Oh, there's got to be a new rhythm. I have to pay attention more. I just need to be, I need to be in a better rhythm so that I have eyes to see and ears to hear. And it just came to light because we saw the history of what happens when you become indifferent, the slow fade. Think of, it was in 26 AD, they're poor. In 60 AD, they're busting at the seams with wealth. It can turn like that where they had a lot. And what they did with it, though, is already they're like, and I'll show you. And for me, and it's probably part of it, I'll show you who looked down on me. I'll show you. You didn't give me credit. You never gave me a chance. I'll stick it to you then. When I'm in control, when I'm in power, you know, watch me. And there's this sense of like, revenge, retaliation, but not even revenge, but you didn't give me. You didn't see. Pride just, ugh. And so there was so much going, oh, I just want to see. I just want to see. And I want to live differently. And there was, and then there was coming home. And so there's things like, my wife has always done amazing things, and so I was trying hard not to be. I also knew, I'm so glad that I didn't come home like the next day. I don't remember what day it was that we were in Laodicea, but there was more to come. By the way, it was a 14-day trip, and you're like, I could be there. You could study for, you know, a year, and it wouldn't be enough. And at the same time, 14 days was enough because all that. What we did in studying these seven letters, we did that in like 12 study days that we were buried in this thing. So at some point your head falls off and your heart can't take it anymore. And that was part of it. My heart couldn't take anymore. But I remember coming home and sitting down with Sarah and like, we like new rhythm. How can we live differently? She already, like she, there were so many things that she was already in a much better rhythm than me. But it was like, let's relook at our budget. And when I came back, we lived under the poverty line at that time. And I still felt that way. Because I go, we live under the poverty line in the United States, but still, globally speaking, that's why I asked, what is poverty? Because technically, according to our standards in the United States, my family and I lived in poverty. So it was like, all right. But we never lacked, never didn't have enough kind of thing. And it was during this time, just so you know, like I actually weighed 30 pounds more just before I went on this trip, things began to change in my rhythm of life. And I would say it was a rhythm of life. I never intended to, like, my mind wasn't, I'm going to go lose weight. My mind is, I need a new rhythm in the way in which I live my life. So that was going to be everything, the way I work, the way I eat, the way I sleep, the way I exercise. Everything needs to, I just kind of put it all on the table. And say, I want to change how I live. And like 5 months later, my mom is texting Sarah, is Wally sick? She did. Like, she's like, come on. Which is interesting, though, too, because that was the thing that Sarah got more than anything. So is Wally sick? And she finally started to say to people, why is it that he's getting healthy and the first thought is he must be sick? But that was kind of this personal thing. I don't know. It was just, that's what it was doing in me. It was doing all sorts of things that just changed. Oh, my goodness, everything is wild. Yeah, so our journey has been, it's been our journey too. We continue to ask questions and push and wrestle with that. And it looks different for everybody. Just invite people on the journey. That's what we try and do. Come on, come on. What's the next right step? What's the next right step? What's the next right step for you? With whatever that might be.